Blog Talk Radio.
This show is brought to you by the Unknown Radio Network, consisting of the very best selection of paranormal internet radio shows anywhere on the web. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Unknown Radio Network.
Welcome to the show. This is Terrify Radio right here on the Unknown Radio Network. I'm Kevin with Unknown Paranormal, and joining me tonight is a special guest co-host from our very own network, Full Spectrum Radio, Mr. Matt Masaryk. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm doing all right, Kevin. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good, doing good. And for those wondering, Jody has a radio interview on another network tonight, so she'll be doing that, and she'll be rejoining myself next Tuesday. So it's me and Matt rocking the mic tonight.
That works for me. You know, I always love doing this, well, everybody's show, actually. That's why if you ever need somebody, Kevin's like, hey, Matt, I need somebody. Jody's off. I'm like, I'm there. I don't care what I got going on. I love talking with all you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I played a little more somber song instead of our usual because of yesterday's events. We got kind of worried down here in Texas today. We had some really bad storms coming our way, and they were talking that it could get really tornadic down here. And because there was a cold front, it was like 90 degrees where I'm at here in Longview, and behind the storm front, it was down in the 50s. So, you know, like a 30-degree drop. And I'm telling you, when the storms rolled in earlier this evening, man, gust of just cold-ass air. And we've had hail and everything else, but no tornadoes. We've had high winds, though. Gusts have been up to about 60 miles an hour. But it's kind of winding down now. It's just showers, a little thunderstorm. So we survived, but unfortunately there was a lot of chaos up there in Oklahoma City. And I'm telling you, man, three huge tornadoes in the same area. You know, 99, 2003, and 2013. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the weather that you guys are experiencing is basically typical Chicago weather, so welcome to what we have to deal with all the time. Oh, it's 90. Okay, the next day it's 50.
Well, yeah, I know, right? But, yeah, all of our thoughts and prayers go out with the families that are struggling through the devastation, you know, lost their homes and everything. And, you know, the what really, I know, probably got to the heart of the nation was the children at the elementary school. Thank goodness it turned out better, even though there was loss. There was children that was lost. Seven were lost at that elementary, but they were thinking at one point 20 to 30 more kids. So, you know, but you know, losing any child is horrific for anybody's, you know, family. So, but that's what's been going on in the world that we've had to deal with, the crazy ass weather. You know, I just think our weather just gets more and more intense as the years go by.
Yeah, there is a lot of climate shift and stuff that's going on, and it's interesting because that's one thing I'm not in a bad way at all, but I love storms, like you know, thunderstorms, stuff like that. Not, you know, I'm not like a tornado chaser or any, you know, storm chaser or anything like that, but when they come through, and the one thing over the years that I've noticed is the weather pattern as it's changing is on the same patterns of what's been basically in climate shift. And what I'm seeing, and I don't know if anybody else pays attention to this or looks into this or if we have any meteorologists that are listening or anything, it's pretty much setting up like we're entering the first stages of the next ice age. And and it's, you know, it's a definite possibility. We're right before, and it's funny, right before the ice ages happen, the poles melt. So yeah. Everybody's been talking about global warming and all that. Well, it's, if you look at weather patterns throughout the years, it's climate shift. And, you know, for what it is, not much we can do about it except for early response things like for tornadoes, hurricanes, and all that. But, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's going to be getting any better over the next years, you know, a few years. So, or, you know, 1,000 years or whatever, but we're only going to be around for a very, very small segment of that. So
yeah.
I hope we can figure out a way that something happens to where we can get something a little faster response time or figure out a different system, because if tornadoes keep happening like they're happening down in Oklahoma and Kansas and all that, it's going to be a rough one.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And more on the paranormal side of things. You know, yesterday, you know, for for everybody out there, you kind of know where I'm coming from when I say, you know, you always have those anniversaries that you really don't even want to call it an anniversary, but certain dates where somebody very, very close to you has passed away, and you try through the years, you know, it does get better, but just for some reason on that day of, you know, their passing, all those feelings come back, you know, of what you experienced going through it and whatnot. Well, you know, I thought yesterday, being the second year anniversary of my girlfriend of over 3 years passing, was going to be a rough one, right? And I was at work, and for the most part, I was pretty busy, so I couldn't really, you know, get myself down, and which I wasn't really trying to. It's just, it's tough, especially tough when the person that passed away was on the phone with you when they passed. So it's kind of a different situation, I guess you could say. But anyway, positively, this is what happened. I was at work. I get a phone call from a client, a new client, someone I've never talked to before, right? And I talked to her. I talked to her mother, and I told them, hey, I'll get back with you after work. So then I come home from work, and I'm like, okay, this is going to suck because I'm home. I'll start thinking again, blah, 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 blah. That didn't happen. I get home, a client that I'm still working their case calls. I was on the phone with them for about an hour. Then I turn around and call these new clients. I talk to the mother for about an hour. Then I ended up talking to some of my team members. Then I ended up talking to the daughter that it's really centered around. And by the time everything was said and done, it was midnight. And I kind of laughed, and I said, yeah, I see what you're doing. You kept me busy all day so that I couldn't get down, you know, because that's what happened. I, you know, on a day where I thought I was going to be down and out, I was helping other people.
Yeah, well, that's definitely a positive thing. It's, a girlfriend of 3 years. When it came to it, if you weren't paying attention to her, it could go a completely different way, too.
Yeah.
So, at least...
It was funny, you know, I joking, you know, as I was going to bed, I was like, yeah, Tammy, I know what you were up to today. I got you. So I at least went to bed with a smile on my face, and everything's good, you know. That's just the way the world works. God did a little knock on my door and said, hey, you got to help other people. Quit worrying about yourself, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, there, I have, well, not with somebody as close as a girlfriend, but I have a situation that's going to be coming up like that, actually, on 4th of July.
Uh-huh.
So, Mark, who I started CPR with, his cousin, who were all of us were very, very close, was hit by a car and killed on 4th of July. She wasn't drunk. She wasn't, no issues at all. It was just, it was a gorgeous night, and she went out for a walk, and car came over the hill, and that was it. So,
wow.
That's going to be this, and this is coming up is going to be the 1 year anniversary.
Oh, those are usually the roughest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I know Mark and Jenny, his other cousin, who was her, it was her sister that was killed.
Yeah.
She was a mother of two. But it's going to be rough for her kids, and yeah, it's going to be a hard one on the 4th of July, so I'm preemptively mentally preparing myself for what you experienced, and that was the first thing that popped in my head, because I didn't know about it and any of that until you mentioned it, and you had talked about it and made that post on Facebook, and that was the first thing that popped in my head. I'm like, wow, it tripped in my mind that 4th of July is coming up, and that's something that I'm going to have to experience. So if you got any pointers on that, man, when it gets closer, let me know.
Yeah, exactly. But other than that, I don't think my group, we kind of went back to basics. We were supposed to go to Arkansas to a 10-story abandoned hospital, but the other team had some things that they had to do, and they had to back out, and so it fell through. So I called up some of my team, and myself, my dad, and one other teammate, we traveled to Marshall where we're having a conference, and we did some ghost hunting in some cemeteries up there. And, yeah, we were in a Confederate soldier cemetery, and we had a lot of K2 activity. We didn't just have one K2, we had three, and we could get the spirit by pointing to whichever meter it would set it off intelligently, right? And the one teammate that I have has some psychic ability. She's still trying to develop a little bit, but she did make contact with this person, and it ended up being a Civil War soldier, a Confederate soldier that was shot in the leg at the Battle of Vicksburg, or at least that's what he was telling her psychically. So, pretty cool. It was kind of cool to be back out in the cemeteries where it all started with my group. And so, yeah, cool little ghost hunt.
Yeah, that's, you know, most people think cemetery, and there's the one that that Dennis talks about on Full Spectrum that's local to him, and he does a lot of maintenance and stuff for him through his company. And that's one thing. It's not anything in the yard, it's not anything at all that has to do with the actual grave sites themselves, it's the buildings is where the stuff's happening. And he was actually able to do some research and track them back to tombstones that are in the grave or in the graveyard. So it's like now he knows who he's talking to. He knows when they died.
Wow. And tonight, we have with us a very special guest. It's Mr. Chris Dedman, and I'm going to read a little bit about him on his bio here, and then we're going to get him. I believe he's on hold. Chris Dedman is a native of Lexington, Kentucky, and has been researching and investigating the paranormal for many years. At the age of 15, Chris saw his first ghost while filming the movie Gettysburg in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and was hooked. This personal experience gave Chris the desire and motivation to seek out answers within the paranormal field. Due to his investigating of the paranormal, Chris works with several families on cases dealing with possible paranormal activity and teaches them how to deal with it. Chris is a member of the Swords of St. Michael Spiritual Warfare and Deliverance, PRRSKY/IN chapter, and the Life Foundation Incorporated. Chris lectures at a variety of paranormal conventions and has worked with many top names in the paranormal field. In October of 2008, one of Chris's cases rocked the nation when it aired on A&E's Paranormal State entitled I Am Six. Chris has also been featured on the Travel Channel's Most Terrifying Places in America, Ghost Adventures, the Discovery Channel's Ghost Lab, and Bio Channel's My Ghost Story. Chris has appeared on numerous radio shows and has been featured in several newspapers and magazines. Chris is always looking for ways to better the field, but above all, it's about helping people, not finding ghosts. And so we're going to get Chris on the line now. Chris, you with us?
What's up?
What's going on, Chris? How you doing?
How you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, man.
Yeah. Can't complain.
Well, you know, that's good for a night like tonight, I guess.
I'm down here in Texas, and it just finally moved through the system. We had a cold front coming in, and blow up a bunch of severe weather, and it just finally settled down outside. But it's dry for the last couple hours.
Yeah, we had a few storms that rolled through here too earlier, and nasty gust of winds knocked out a lot of power and trees down and stuff. But nothing by far what's going on in Oklahoma. And if it's okay with you guys, I'd like to, you know, just kind of say, you know, keep them in your prayers tonight, people. They're going through some nasty heartache and death, and it's just Oklahoma has just been rattled. And I was watching today, there was actually a guy that was in the Joplin, Missouri tornadoes a couple years ago and moved to Moore, Oklahoma, where they were hit, where he was hit again. Luckily, he survived. So that guy definitely has a guardian angel or something watching over him, because two major tornadoes within 2 years and bailed to walk away. He's got some good judo going on or something. I don't know what it is, but it's just miraculous to hear some of the stories that's coming out of Oklahoma where people have survived the odds, but there is also the ones that haven't. And I know a lot of our listeners out there are probably have family or friends or whatnot that are in that area, and just my heart goes out to them, and God bless and Godspeed.
Yeah, I was watching on the news prior to coming on air, and they interviewed this, I believe this lady was in her 70s or 80s there in Moore, Oklahoma, and her house was totally destroyed back in 99 when they had the tornado, and she got hit again and wiped out the house was in the same location, everything, got wiped out again on this tornado. And the odds of that is 1 in 475 trillion.
Wow.
So, and she survived too, you know, the second time as well. So, yeah, there's some people, there's some guardian angels out there watching over some of these folks. And for that city to be hit three times by two F5s and an F4, that's just, it floors them.
It does. You know what I don't understand, and maybe it's just me, and you know, you don't get it until you put yourself there, but I could not live in it. It's like I'll never live in L.A. because I don't like earthquakes. I just don't. I just don't want to put myself in that position, and it's kind of like, you know, I don't want to live in Tornado Alley. I'm sorry. I have no desire to do that, and that's not being selfish or trying to put down that area. It's just I know that there's a great chance, especially the last 5 years, how bad the tornadoes have been in those areas. And I know for some cases some people just can't pick up and move, and I understand that. But, you know, it's like I had a friend that moved out there a year ago, and I'm like, dude, what are you thinking? You know, out of all the places in the United States, why are you moving to Tornado Alley? And he's like, oh, I don't know, it just sounded like a good idea. And I'm just like, I'm scratching my head in confusion going, man, you're just asking. You know, you're just setting yourself up. And it's kind of like, you know, karma's nasty, and you just shouldn't play with it. I'm just saying. And like I said, I understand, you know, not everybody can pick up and move. I understand that. And you got to go where the jobs are, and I understand that too. It's just crazy, you know, when you think about the things that we do, you know, in the case of, you know, okay, I got a job transfer out there and stuff. So ultimately, I'm chasing the dollar at that point. You know, it's do I put my family in risk for the dollar, or you know what I mean? It's just, I mean, we can make a show out of that. I mean, just off that subject all night long, and I don't want to get off track. I'm just, you know, it's just crazy. Some of the things we as humans do to ourselves, and then, you know, and then beat the odds, and too, you know, I don't know. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
Well, with that, talking about the woman who's, Kevin, that you said her house was hit twice and she survived both of them, and the odds and everything. Okay, so cut it in half. We'll call it 1 in 2.364 trillion that her house would even get hit by a tornado.
Yeah, exactly.
In the first place. So, I mean, and when you think about it, it's like if the opportunity's there, yeah, your odds, okay, go from that to 1 in 10, let's call it just for a simplistic math. So, yeah, you know it's there. Yeah, but, I mean, Tornado Alley stretches all the way from South Texas all the way up into Wisconsin. Right? So anybody, if you move in that region, you don't want it? Move to the Appalachians to where tornadoes can't form, if that's the case. But, I mean, yeah, there's always a risk. Even down in southern Illinois, where, Chris, you were talking about earthquakes, there's down by Peoria, a little bit south towards Springfield, there's a fault line that runs through there. And I think it's three or four years ago, there was a 4.4 that went off in Illinois, and it's not a place that you think that there'd be earthquakes.
Oh, yeah, we've got one that runs through Kentucky, through Paducah, right along the Mississippi right there, and a major fault line. And it's just – and I know it's had a couple times. And, you know, it's like you said, it's just – it's crazy when we think about it. You know, we got hit last year this time, during this time, by tornadoes here in Kentucky, something that we don't see very often at all, if any. Had in a week span, you know, 12 reported – tornadoes that touch down, wiping out major, small towns, completely, basically wiping them off the map. So, you know, it is what it is, you know. it don't matter where you're living right now. We've done something to Mother Nature, and we've really pissed her off. She's being fierce the last 5 or 6 years, but, you know, and it has. It's the environment has changed. I can remember living in Kentucky. We're in the Ohio Valley, and what they call the Ohio Valley, and the temperature, the weather here changes by the minute, almost literally. I mean, it's like one day it's 70, the next day it's 35. It's ridiculous. But we always, our winters were always, we always had, you know, mild to bad winters for this area, but here lately we've gotten lucky and really haven't had that. And it's just what's going on with the atmosphere and, you know, the ozone and all that. I guess it really is. Now we're, you know, all that stuff they were teaching us when we were in elementary and middle school, I guess we're now finally seeing the effects of it. You know, it's, you know, they told us it was going to happen. So I guess they were right somewhere.
Right. Hey, Chris, can you do me a favor? And please, because your weather swings are sound like ours, can you stop blowing that crap up here? I'm not that far away from you.
I tell you something that's been really bad this year, too, is the the pollen and the mold and all that, the allergies. I tell you what, if you got allergies, then it's the worst place to live. But I mean, you walk side and literally see the pollen on your car. Like, it's your car's yellow. It's got a yellow tint to it because of it's covered completely in pollen. And it's, you know, but these mild winters we've been having, you know, it's just, you know, between the ragweed and the pollen and stuff and the mosquitoes, you know, it's darn near impossible almost to go outside anymore and enjoy it because it just, The whole weather pattern is just all messed up. But anyway, it's a paranormal show, not a weather show. What are we talking about?
I got something kind of in common with you, Chris. I didn't get into the paranormal until later, but I had a paranormal experience as well at Gettysburg. When I think I was 12 or 13 when I had mine.
I'm telling you, you want to see something, it's got to be the most haunted place on earth. I don't care what nobody says. You know, you think about it. 3 days of battle, over 50,000 plus people lost their lives or were captured or whatnot. More people died in the 3 days of that battle than the 9 years of the Vietnam War. I mean, it's just, you know, there were bodies upon bodies upon bodies that were stacked on top of each other because they just couldn't keep up with getting them off the field. There was just, you know, trenches were completely filled with bodies. You know, Little Round, you know, they talk about Little Round Top, that it was just an ocean of blood across the field because of all the dead Confederates that had tried to charge and take that mountain. It's just, it's crazy, the death that took place there. And it was all, it was a lot of it was in vain. You know, it wasn't a pretty thing at all.
Yeah, and I didn't think about it till, you know, because being a kid, I wasn't really thinking of the dates that we were there. But my family's from Ohio, so every summer we would drive up to see Grandma and everybody up in Ohio. So we'd always make, you know, we were on a big Civil War bus, so we'd always make different paths on the way up or on the way back down to Texas. And we stopped into Gettysburg, and it was the 4th of July weekend, which is when the battle actually happened. And we were out there, and we saw myself, my dad, and my brother, we saw a regiment off in the distance, right? You could see them. You could see the flag. You could see everything. You couldn't hear any sound, but you could see them marching. And so we went over to the office where the park ranger is, and we said, hey, are they having a reenactment today? And he goes, no, this is the 4th of July weekend. We don't have any reenactments going on today. And we saw a whole freaking regiment.
And, you know, and that story has been, that's something that led a lot of people, you know, have seen or heard. And, you know, a lot of people say that they've heard cannon fire or guns going off. And, you know, they don't allow that in the park. So it's, you know, it's, and then the fact that you actually went and talked to a ranger, that just verifies it even more. There is so much that goes on in that park, and people just, they just don't get it. And they only get a fraction of it. You know, I mean, can you imagine the stuff that goes on there when the place is closed and all that activity during the day, you're drumming that stuff up, and then, you know, at night, it's got to be a playground.
Oh, yeah. Now, what was your experience there?
I got lucky. I was at a young age. I got into the Boy Scouts, and once you got older, we developed a program called the Leadership Program, and it was preparing the older guys to become leaders. And we, part of that program, we developed a Civil War reenactment group, and we would go and do these reenactments. You know, one or two a month. We traveled everywhere to do these. And when motion pictures decide to do a movie about the Civil War, they will reach out to the reenactor community because you have everything that you need. Down, you know, most of our uniforms are you know, originally reproduced down to the stitching, and that's less money they have to spend on costuming, and they know that. And it's going to be, everything you have is going to be two period, and that's what they want. They want that look, they want that feel, and they know that you know that they're not going to teach us anything. We're already actors, basically doing this every weekend. So we got lucky, and we were asked to come in and be a part of the movie Gettysburg. Originally, it was called Killer Angels, but it's based off the novel. It wasn't until later, after they got into the editing process and stuff, they decided to actually change the name of Gettysburg. And we had been filming all day long, and the group that we were a part of, we got the evening off, and they were because they were shooting night scenes at night, but our unit wasn't involved. So we took the night off, and this was before you could go in park after dark and really, you know, if you got caught, it was no big deal. It was like, hey, we're closed. You need to get out. You know, this is post 9/11, so you know, the they weren't so hard on you. Don't do that stuff now, because they'll take your butt to jail. It's posted very much so. You do not go into that park after dark. And we were walking across the battlefield of where Pickett's Charge took place. And we knew that, like I said, there was some night filming going on over into the valley next to us. And you could start hearing things. You know, we started hearing, guns clanking and distinctively we could hear drumming, you know, drumming going on. And in the battles, when a unit would march, there was always a drummer that was tied to that unit, and that drummer would keep pace for the unit to march to, basically. And so we started hearing certain things like that, and we just blew it off. Like, what we were hearing was the filming going on. In front of us was a row of trees, and that's where the Federal Army actually was during the Battle of Vicksburg. And it was a clear night. You could see the stars. The moon was out, and this fog started rolling in across the field. And I remember making jokes about the movie The Fog, you know, like, you know, oh, we better get out of here, you know, something's going to get us if, you know, that fog gets to us. And just, you know, 15-year-old boys being boys, you know, we were acting goofy, and I'm sure there was a few other stupid remarks that were made and stuff. But before we knew it, this fog had completely surrounded us. You couldn't see 2 feet in front of you. And as this fog surrounded us, that noise that we had heard from the distance became very loud. It was growing closer. At this point, you know, your curiosity and your adrenaline starts running, and you're just, everything starts getting the better of you, and you're just kind of like, okay, obviously something else is going on here. This is not what we're hearing from the movie. It's too close now. It's you know, at this point, almost on top of us. And no sooner than you're figuring out what's going on, this fog backs off, and it creates a circle, basically, right in front of us. And out of that fog walked an entire regiment of Confederate soldiers right in front of us. To the fact that you could have reached that, we could have reached out and touched them. That's how close they were. In detail, you could see everything from the buttons on their coats to the bedrolls rolled up and over their shoulders to their guns that they were carrying. And you could hear a lot of times these guys carried what we now call man purses. Then they were called haversacks, and that carried a lot of their personal belongings in it, and they would hang their little metal tin cup on the buckle of that. And that cup or that buckle would bang across the barrel of the gun. It would make a distinct clanking sound. You could see that and hear that. You could smell sulfur in the air from the gunpowder, from the gunfire. It was basically like the whole battlefield had come alive in that very instant. As the unit passed in front of us, right behind them, coming out of the fog, led drummer boy. It was a drummer boy drumming, keeping the pace of march going. And they came out of the fog, went across in front of us, and went back in the fog, and they completely disappeared. Within minutes, which seemed like an eternity, the fog completely backed off the battlefield and went away, and there we stood in the middle of the field under a cloudless night with the stars shining and the moon out. It was just like something you would see in a movie. It was very surreal. To this day, there's 3 people that were involved that will not talk about what happened that night. They deny it because it shook you to your core. You know, it's one thing to say, you know, I heard my grandmother talk to me last night while I was sleeping, or, you know, a door opened up to own, or this was beyond that. This was almost like the holy grail of an investigator's life. There's people that have been doing investigating for 40 plus years and have never seen anything like this. Never. And it was one of those things. And from that point on, I always wondered why me? Why was I to be there in that spot at that exact time on that exact day at that exact night to see what happened? And it was kind of like what you said. It was close to the anniversary that we were there filming. You know, could it have been because of the filming that was going on all around? Because we weren't allowed to actually film in the park, but we filmed all the way around the park and seeing that, you know, different battle scenes that took place outside of the park that the park doesn't own, that's private land, you know, was at this point we had been filming for months. So was it something like that that had drummed this up? I don't know. I'll never have the answer. But it from that point on, I wanted to know why, and I started noticing things as I went through life of things like that would happen, that would happen to me. I have to remember when I first got into a group, I kept a lot of things to myself that would happen because I didn't want them to think that I was just saying that, or you know how it is. You always got that one person that no matter what, they walk in somewhere and they get pinched, or they, you know, they see a spirit, or you know who I'm talking about. Don't be quiet, fellas. Nope. You know who exactly. You know exactly what I'm saying here. Always that one, you know, like, oh my God, you hear that? Or, oh, what was, you know, and it's like, okay, right, okay, really, come on, you know. And I didn't want to be that person. I didn't want to be that person that, and everybody would think, you know, oh yeah, the new guy here is, you know, all this stuff's going on, you know, whatever, you know. I didn't want to be that person. So it took a while before I even would share things. And I luckily had a good, prior to joining that team, I did a lot of stuff with just buddies and on my own and stuff. You know, it wasn't until later into doing this that I realized that there were teams and that this was bigger than I could ever imagine. And I had a great mentor and that told me, you know, no, don't hold back. You know, personal experiences are just as valid as what we can catch. It all comes together. At the end of the investigation, we bring everything together. If we've got some evidence we've thought that validates what your personal experience was, then that's just even more of what we can use to share with the client and stuff. And I call it one of the greatest rides of my life that day, you know, being in Gettysburg. And I've got a certificate proving that I was there, you know. So I came, I conquered, and I got my certificate, you know.
Well, here's a question I have on that situation. You were 15, and how old were the other people that experienced this also, like at that time? You were 15 years old when you had your first experience at Gettysburg. How old were the other people? Were they the same age group kind of thing, or was it?
We were the age group ranged from 15 to 18.
Okay, and they said they don't talk about it, you know, and it's hush hush with them. What did you have any belief at all before this happened, or this is what your defining moment of like, oh no, there's no such thing as ghosted. No, I need to find out more about this.
I had inclination that things. I've always been. You know, growing up as a kid, I was always interested in horror and ghosts, and I can remember reading the Hardy Boys mystery books, and you know, Scooby Doo was my favorite cartoon, and I've seen every scary movie that ever came out. And actually, at the age of 12, I had I was either 12 or 13 in that range. I had an experience where I had a Roman candle, which is a firework that's about the size of a tennis can, that had a short fuse on it, and it backfired basically, and it shot right in my face. I had third degree burns from the middle of my head all the way down up underneath my chin. My eyelids melted shut. I had a quarter size hole above my left eye. It was pretty bad. It's almost like getting shot with a shotgun without a bullet, basically. yeah, exactly. And when I was on the way to the hospital, I coded, and I died. For those that don't understand that term, but and when that happened, I can remember laying there in the paramedic saying, "We're losing him. We're losing him." And then the next thing I knew, I was sitting at the end of the bench by the back door facing me, watching them work on me, and which we know is an out-of-body experience. Now, I didn't see the white light, and I didn't have God reach down his hand and say, come with me. And I didn't experience that part of what people describe as an out-of-body experience. What I was just watching them distinctively work on me to bring me back, and thinking to myself, kind of, you know, wow, this is cool, but at the same time going, but wait a minute, I shouldn't be here. that should be there. It's like you're in two different times in a sense. And which I've learned from that experience, you know, speaking with like Chip Coffee and other people, is that experience right there is probably what triggered the things that happened to me from that point on through life, such as seeing what I saw at Gettysburg, attracting things that when I go on investigations, things are attracted to me because they know I've crossed over to their realm and I've come back. So it's almost like, it's kind of like Motel 6 will leave the light on for you. That's kind of like me. Like, I'll leave the light on you. I've had a lot of people that do like aura readings and stuff that say, dude, your aura is ridiculous. Like, you have a huge aura that projects off of you that's bright, that's very bright. And which, that's a positive thing because you're putting off positive energy. But the problem with that is you're going to attract things. And if you don't calm that down, you could attract bad stuff. Like, you could bring, and you know, so the thing about being in the paranormal world is you learn a lot more about things that you would have never even, you know, I didn't know anything about auras or mystic, you know, mythology, you know, gems and stones, and yeah, this field has educated me so much on so many different levels of different things that you know, that's the crazy side of this field in a sense. You know, it's just to be able to learn, and it's not all about just about you know ghost hunting or whatever. There's so much more to it that I think a lot of people, you know, cut themselves short because they don't open their minds and their horizons to see the other things that are going on around them. You know, I used to be a skeptic of psychics. I used to think, you know, well, until you tell me how to win, you know, give me the lottery numbers, I don't think you're real. You know, that's just the way it was. Of course, I was around during the time of, you know, oh, call my 900 number and pay $1.99. I tell you your fortune. And, you know, that was the big phase in the 90s. You know, that you had Mademoiselle that would come on your TV every day and tell you to call, and they would give you your fortune. You know, that's what I grew up to. So, you know.
Oh, what the hell was her name? I got to look that up. It was the black Jamaican lady that was on. And then you got the other fake John Edwards that was on that eventually came out.
Yeah, Madam Cleo or whatever her name was.
Madam Cleo. Yeah. That's it. The reason I was asking about if, and I didn't even have to ask the next question, and you already answered it. There's been something that I've been noticing with pattern, and this is not just blowing smoke. This is honest to God truth, because I do ask a lot of people this, as far as people that are in the field. And when you were talking about how you coded in the bus on the way to the hospital, well, I've been noticing my background, my degree, like everything is in abnormal psychology. I was an EMT for a while until I got a motorcycle accident and got injured. Oh, this is something that really intrigues me. Like, my mind and my brain works in a scientific, in a purely scientific manner as far as testing goes. So when I start to notice a pattern when I talk to people, and when I talk to, and Kevin will tell you too, on Facebook and everything like that, like, if somebody sends me a message, I respond to them. If they ask me questions, then I start interviewing them to figure out a process to help them. And that's a lot of what I have gone through is, like, you know, were you pre or postnatal? Did you have any issues when you were in the womb that you know of, or afterwards? Was the umbilical cord around your neck and you ended up, you know, being pronounced dead, and like, even back to the point of birth? And a lot, I mean, I would say at least 85% of people that are in this field that I've talked to, at least, I'm not putting everybody in the same thing, but 85% of people who I've asked that question to said, yes, they've had a near-death experience at some point in their life. Which is weird to think about. But a lot of people, lack of oxygen, lack of, you know, at birth up until even, I was in a car accident and I was pronounced dead on the scene, but I was able to be revived, or I had a heart attack, or this, that, or the other thing. I think it's a trigger for a lot of people who are in the field to, once you know that you've had that and you can't answer the questions for yourself, that you reach out to other people and you start to get more involved with death. And as morbid as it sounds, it really, really isn't. There is a science to it. There is a background, you know, there is a research to it. And if you're in it for the right reasons to get the correct answers or to help people who have nowhere else to turn and do good for other people. But yeah, I was blown away by the amount of people that have told me, and whether I can verify it or not, that's up to just listening to what they're saying. But the fact that many people have told me, yeah, I died at this point, or I was pronounced dead, or I was at the brink of death and I was brought back, and that's what got me into this, is kind of staggering, actually.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, something that I've noticed also, too, and there's a lot of things like what you're saying that's tying people into this field to different things. There's an event that I do every year in March in Gettysburg called Phenomenology. It started as Phenomenology 101, then 102, 103, 104, and we just did 105. And it's a huge event for that area. And it draws people from all over to this event. And, you know, Patrick Burns and Marla Gibson and Bill Bean and myself and Chip Coffey, and we had the Haunted Collector crew there, John Zaffis and Brian Kano, and, you know, John's daughter and son, Amy and Chris, and we had Aaron Saggers, and, I mean, the list just goes on and on. And over time, over the last 3 or 4 years, talking to the different people that's drawn to this event, and it's like a homecoming event for the speakers. It's we kind of get our own end of the hotel with our own lobby and stuff, which is where we always spend our nighttime at, is if we're not off doing other things, and we get to really communicate and relate and talk as people in the field, which doesn't happen very often. And most of the people that go to that event go because they've had some kind of experience at Gettysburg, or there's something there that draws them to Gettysburg. And it's wild to hear and talk to some of the people and hear their stories, and nobody had put it together. And in the last couple of years, I've kind of started putting this together, that it's not a coincidence that we're here. It's because there's something about this location that keeps drawing us all to this place. And it's same concept of what you're saying. It's, you know, people that are in this field, it's because they've had some sort of tragedy or, you know, tragic event or something that's occurred in their life, whether it be death or out-of-body experience or – and it's just – that's the side of it that, you know, people that I love doing the TV shows, don't get me wrong, and a lot of them have benefited this field, but at the same time they've hurt this field. And I think just the common logic of the field and going old school and just kind of sitting back and doing it the old way, we've lost sight of that. Everybody yeah. wants to run in with it's blazing and do it just like they do on TV. And you know, a lot of people ask me, you know, what's your favorite tool of investigating or da da da, and I say myself. I like to go into an environment and just listen, just see, just smell, just touch, just use what God gave me to use to be able to help. And then, you know, then of course we'll bring in other stuff to backup claims and stuff. But I think people have really lost the passion and the drive of just doing old school, just looking outside the box and you know, put away the $100 gadgets and quit doing it like everybody else. Come up with your own style and your own way and you know, read some old books from you know, Haas or the the Warrens or, you know, people that have been doing this for, you know, were doing this years ago. And I think you might get a better look or a better experience off of what's going on around you if you do. Just a thought.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting.
All right, Kevin. I've been monopolizing the time here, so go ahead.
It's interesting to say that. I did a lecture at Fair Unity Conference down here in Texas, and you know, my team back in December was sitting around. I've been in the field for 4 years. My team's been together 3 years when I started this team, and you know, we've been everywhere. We've done, you know, you name it, and we're like, we got to do something new. We got to go a different direction that most teams are not going, you know. And so we sat around and started talking, and we come up with basically that's what my lecture is, thinking outside the box in the paranormal. And what we're doing now, yeah, we got all the gadgets, you know, and that kind of stuff. But what we're doing is we're going backwards, because like I feel the same way as you. I think a lot of the information has been lost. The Native Americans, back in the day, very spiritual people, very spiritual people. They are even today, but they didn't have all the technology. They had what God gave all of us on this earth, water, fire, those type of elements. So what we're doing is we're going backwards. We're testing fire, you know, introducing fire, not starting a fire in a location, but burning a candle, right? You know, testing water, testing limestone, testing rocks because of the metaphysical side of things, quartz and everything else that can hold energy, and see how those things affect paranormal activity, right? Do they attract activity? Do they enhance it? And use all the other pieces of equipment just to monitor the environment and, you know, see if there are changes. And so that's what we're doing this year. We put a new spin on it, you know, going backwards, because we want to find out some new information.
Yeah, absolutely.
See, the one thing that I've been doing too is, yeah, you know what, I pretty much have almost everything under the sun down from, I have like 9 suitcases full of equipment. What's funny is I bring a travel bag just in case I do need to break out something, and I have my millimeters, I have my digital recorders, I have K2s, you know, all that stuff. But the number one thing is, and this is, I'm talking pretty much, you know, 99% of it, but of locations that I go on, especially private residence. If it's a private residence, You gotta think about it. One, you don't have the people that are there walking around, whether it's a bar or a house or whatever. They're not walking around with the lights off doing this stuff. They have lights on. They're experiencing all this stuff. And they're experiencing it just them themselves. They're not, you know, they're not like, oh, you know what, I think I just heard a knock. Let me shut the lights off and turn on my night vision camcorder and walk around.
Well, I'm just going to do it 2 more times.
Yeah.
Can you knock 2 more times for me?
No, I mean, you got to think of it as the homeowner, the bar owner, the location owner, whatever it is. It's almost an instant state of paranoia. To where it's,
yeah,
you know, having that person that's standing too close to you, like you feel somebody, a living human being. If you're standing at the ATM or you're standing in line at the gas station to pay for gas or whatever, you know if somebody is behind you that's standing too close to you. You have that sixth sense. You get that feeling.
Yeah.
Well, imagine that, but not making noise. The lights are making noise. The lights are on. You hear footsteps coming towards you, and you can't see anything. Well, and that's one thing that I think that is kind of a fallacy of the shows, or a falsified idea that the shows create, is that everything has to be done in the dark and done at night. And it doesn't, because there's a benefit and it does hurt at the same time. For somebody, a person who lives in their house and they go down their basement, they're going to do laundry, and it's, 3:30 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they're hearing footsteps above them, or they're hearing, whatever around them, they're not, blacking out the windows and trying to communicate with it. No, it's just, it's happening at that point, and they're getting what they're getting. The one benefit of doing an overnight or a nighttime investigation is there's less life outside going on around. So you have less contamination, you have less possibilities of other things going on. But it doesn't mean that that's like the holy grail of a way to investigate. No, you got to feel the environment and see what's coming out of it, what times it's happening. I did two private locations, actually downtown Chicago, that I've gotten more stuff during the day than I ever have at night.
And I agree. And something, too, I think people get misled on a lot, too, is that you're only allowed to investigate on Friday and Saturday night.
Yeah.
I don't know why that's the trend. I understand most people are off on the weekends. But if people really need your help, they're not going to care if it's a Monday or a Friday. They're just not. And with my job, I work mostly weekends, and I can't take off for. So I've done probably the majority of my investigations have been done Sunday through Thursday, and not once have I ever had a business or a homeowner who was really having something happen go, nope, sorry, you got to come back on Friday or Saturday. Not going to happen. It's so funny how people are so wrapped up into the trend of what's going on and so afraid to take that step outside of the circle on their own. And I think if more people started doing that, we would see a bigger collaboration and explosion in this field.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Chris, there is a project that I do have coming up shortly, and it involves 20, confirmed, Kevin, you know about this too, 21 other
yeah.
people. There's an organized, it's kind of a free-for-all actually, but everybody out in the paranormal field has a book. Well, not everybody, but most people that are out there have a book of, these are my beliefs, this is what it is, this, that, and the other thing. And the one thing that I've been trying to set up, and it's hard when you have this many people involved, but I have people on board who are, I can't mention names just due to them asking, but there are current TV personalities, down to David Rountree, Tracy Ray, Doug and Debbie Constantino. These are the names I can mention. So up to the mom and pop people that have ideas, well, basically what I'm setting up is everybody in this book is going to get 10 pages to write about whatever the hell you want to contribute to.
Wow, that's cool.
There has been kind of a lack of paranormal unity, to where people are going at each other and backstabbing this and that. Well, everybody gets, 10 pages to write about what the hell you want to write about. Nobody knows about what anybody's writing about except for me, the editor, and we're doing it as a self-published, so it doesn't conflict with anybody's stuff. So
that's cool.
I would actually love for you to be a part of it if you want to be.
Oh, Lord. You want me to write?
Kevin's a part of it. Jody's a part of it. Sarah's going to be in it. Brittany's going to be in it.
I was a jock. English was not my major.
I'm sorry if it seems like I'm putting you on the spot. That's not it at all. I mean, I know there's other stuff that has to be figured out first. But
I would love to be a part of it. That is awesome. That's a great idea that you've come up with, you know, and you're getting a collaboration of so many great minds. And you know, and they're all coming from different areas. You know what I mean? You know, like David Roundtree, I could sit and listen to that man for days. He blows me away. He just, you know, he is an amazing person, and his fiance Tracy, you know, I mean, just blow. And I got lucky and got to hang out with Dave a couple times last year for the first time. It all been through Facebook and stuff, but you know, the Constantinos, you know, same people, wonderful people, you know. I can just imagine, and even the ones you said you can't even mention, this could be phenomenal for the field. Phenomenal.
Yeah, and it's, anything, and that's the way that I'm setting it up, and, you know, I love having Kevin and Joey and, like, the whole Unknown Radio Network a part of it, because everybody has something different to contribute.
Yeah.
And whether or not it's Joe Blow Paranormal out of, you know, Topeka, Kansas or something like that. And that's why I didn't want to go all big names, because there's a lot of people that I've talked to that have extremely interesting theories that they test and they work, but nobody ever hears about it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's exactly why it's like, you know, going old school to the latest and greatest technology.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good deal. Well, yeah, just message me and let me know what the dynamics and streaming is and what you need, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, like I said, I felt bad putting you on the spot, but I'm like, well, I don't know how often he checks Facebook. I was looking through your page, and I'm like, it's pretty few and far between that, well, not long term, but just an idea I want to throw at you. As you know, personally and personally invite you. So,
I appreciate it. Wow, that's an honor, dude. Thanks. Thanks very much.
Yeah, it's not easy choreographing this. Let me tell you, with that many people, with all their schedules and all the events, and
oh yeah, I know.
That's one of the other people that's involved, and I'm sure you probably. Ursula Bielski.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you know Ursula?
I've heard of Ursula.
Yeah, Ursula. She was a guest judge on Paranormal Challenge. She was on when Scott Grunewald was on, and they were out in California doing the episode. Yeah, she has a Chicago Hauntings. Ghost tour that's around here. It's the buses.
Yeah.
Her Adam Seltzer. They just opened a branch out in L.A. that they're doing now too. So.
Oh, that.
Sorry, I had to give her a plug really quick. that's my girl. I love Ursula.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it's. It's so interesting to, you know, I talk about it a lot, helping clients and, you know, and what I talked about earlier, going backwards a little bit and trying to get it more information. To me, I want to get information that I can share with everybody in the field, because the bottom line is, you know, not only do we have questions personally that we want to find out, but when we get phone calls from people that are scared and freaking out and whatnot, I want to be able to have more solid you know, information that I can use to apply to help people. And I think that that's where a lot of the paranormal teams out there don't realize, you know, you need to try to use as much advantage as you can, not only networking with people and talking with other teams and talking with people that may have been investigating longer than you, and start putting all this information together to use to help people, you know. I'm beyond the point of going, well, I'm going to go to see if there's spirits here, or, you know, does the spirit world exist? I already know all that, you know. I don't get all hyped up of, oh, let's go see if we can get the holy grail of paranormal evidence so we can put on the internet. No. It's about helping people now, for me.
One of the I get a lot of case calls now, you know, especially with the tie to the IM6, and you know, my whole focus now is I'm dealing with things more on the spiritual side. You know, the big thing nowadays is everybody's a demonologist or an exorcist, or, you know, or on the flip side, everybody's got demons in their home, or they're being attacked by a demon or something like that. And so I get a lot of calls and emails daily about other groups that are coming to me with cases, or people that are personally have found me and they're coming to me with things. And one of the things that I've learned over doing this, and it was something we did with the IM6 case, was we made sure that we had a psych eval done on the client, so that schizophrenia and split personality and all that could be ruled out. We wanted to make sure that nothing like that was involved, that what we were solely dealing with, and it wasn't because we didn't believe the client, it was just simply we needed to be able to back what we were doing because of this, of the skeptics and the haters and everybody else that would come at us. And to make sure, health-wise, that this wasn't going on with the client. So nowadays when I get a call, whether it be from a group or from a client or whatever, saying, oh, yeah, I've got demons in my house, they're attacking my child, da-da-da-da, this is what's happening. And what I say is, okay, well, what I need you to do between now and so-and-so is I need you to go ahead and make an appointment and get a psych evaluation done. And they go, huh? And I go, well, we just need to make sure that we rule out that there's nothing medically wrong, because – these symptoms that you're describing also can be tied to split personality, so on and so on. And if these people will really need help and they really have demons and this is what's going on, they will not question you for a second. They'll agree and say, no problem, I'll make that appointment first thing tomorrow or Monday or whatever the time may be. It's the ones that start backpedaling on you. That's when you know something's not right. And that call it a trick or whatever you want to call it, because they're going to get it done regardless, because I want to make sure that this person is, you know, healthy and of sound mind, and to cover my butt, especially when you're dealing with religious situations. But it's so funny that the teams that are out there that don't even think of that, that don't even think, you know, of that process, and that's just a normal everyday process of what I do. That's one of the things that's part of my pre-investigating is to get things like that set up. Get, you know, I want a clearance from their doctor also. I'm not going to run into these people's houses and start doing an investigation and then their physical health is not able to stand, you know, the elevation of what's going on in there, and they end up having a heart attack, and then their family goes, well, that dummy there was the one that was in there when it happened, so let's sue him or whatever, you know. And I hope I hope teams that are going in and dealing with situations like this have a good insurance policy, because if you can sue somebody over McDonald's hot coffee that you knew was hot and you dumped it in your lap and still won the lawsuit, trust me, people are going to sue somebody, because somebody's going to end up getting somebody killed. You've got these people running around claiming to be demonologists and exorcists and stuff, and they're going in these homes and they're throwing holy water around and, you know, saying some prayers out of the Bible. And I'm telling you, mark my words, something's going to happen. And when it does, it's going to ruin the paranormal community for a while because it's going to pull all the haters out that's going to say, see, we told you all, we told you. But it's also going to make it really hard on the good people in this field to continue to be in the field.
Yeah, I agree. I agree because it seems like a lot of the cases that we've had in the past, the homeowner calls us, and we're the second team that they call. And the first team came in there. So the first team came in there. They collected evidence, and they told the client, "Yeah, you got something going on in your house." The client, you know, well, what do we do? Well, we don't know. Well, we can't help you. And then they walk out. And not only that, they've stirred it up. It's gotten worse. And you know, the client is just. Not only there's a client in more fear, but at the same time they feel betrayed, and it's hard for us when we do go in to win their trust back, right? Because they've already been screwed over. So, yeah, we've had to clean up a lot of messes, it seems like.
Why should they trust you? What makes you different from the other group that came in and stirred everything up and then ran out the door with their tails between the legs the first time they heard a knock or somebody said boo in their ear or whatever? You know, what makes you different? So, you know, 80% of my cases last year were cleaning up other teams that were claiming to be experienced investigators' work. And, you know, and that's the downside. They all go out, they watch the shows, they go out to the world's largest ghost hunting store, a.k.a. Walmart, and they buy them a digital recorder and a digital camera, and now they're experienced ghost hunters. And the client is suffering. The true people that work their tails off for this field are suffering. And, you know, and then you've got the flip side of that. You've got the clients that are playing the field. I had a client that called me from West Virginia who had six different teams in her house. And she was one that was claiming that there was demons and whatnot. And this family was very poor. They lived in a very nasty environment. The entire family slept in the same room in two different beds. And what they were doing was they were trying to find someone to say that there was demons there so that they could bring, they wanted to be on TV, and they wanted to prosper from being on TV. So being a true investigator, when I found out that there were six other teams involved already to what was going on, first thing I did was call the very last team that was in there and said, okay, so I've got this phone call from this client. I know you've been there. Why are they calling me? What was it that you couldn't do that they feel I need to come in? And this team happened to be made of paramedics, nurses, psychiatrists, and firefighters. And the first thing the guy said was, don't waste your time, stay away. And he started explaining to me what was going on there and what was happening, and that the team before him had went through the same thing as the team did before them. So it's kind of a red flag, like you said. When you go into a home, on the flip side of that, if you've got a homeowner that's come to you saying, I've got hauntings going on, and I've had three teams come in here, and they tell me there's nothing going on, that should be a red flag. You should be contacting those teams to find out, what's going on? Don't be the knight in shining armor and go in there and try to tell them that it's haunted because they're telling you it's haunted. Do your homework.
Oh, yeah. I've done that many a time, too, Chris, as far as, you know, if they say, well, I've had three other teams in there, and I'll say, oh, really? What are the names of the teams? Where are they from? You know, I find out who they are. And I'll contact them and say, hey, what's up with this client here? And they'll give me if I get a constant from everybody else, like you said, you know, that they're just trying to seek out attention, then I don't even get myself involved in it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, guys, we all want to help everybody, at the same time, we are doing this for free. We're doing this in our spare time. And our family is also being, you know, put to the side when we do this. We're taking away time from our family and our own responsibilities when we do that. And, you know, you really have got to look at the bigger picture and decide, okay, is this case, does it really something I want to do? And then if you say yes, then you got to go in and check and make sure that it's something that's legit, is somebody that's just looking for attention or thinking they're going to get a TV show out of it or whatever. And it's, you know, it's amazing how you can sit down and talk to some of these teams. When I do these conventions and I talk to them and say, okay, you know, when you're doing, you know, your preliminary investigation, you're talking to the client and you're asking questions and stuff, and you go into the house and you're meeting the family and you're kind of looking around, you look at their DVD selections. Do you see what kind of movies that they buy and keep on hand? Are you seeing, you know, are there TV shows that are shows? Do they have every series and disc of Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures? You know, when you go into their rooms, is there, you know, posters of this and that, you know, and they all look at me like I'm dumbfounded and like, no, I've never done that before. I'm like, wake up, people, wake up. You know, these are clues you need to be looking for. These are signs. These are things that, you know, these people know a whole lot more than they're telling you. And what's probably ended up happening is that they've gotten so involved and so wrapped up into what's going on with these shows and stuff that in their mind now they're having a haunting in their own home. And what it comes down to is that they're just freaking themselves out. Not all the time, but a lot of the times.
Yeah.
That said, my first two or three questions of my line of questioning is, do you watch the shows? If so, yes. Which ones? Just to find out. I mean, and no offense because you've been on there, but like Ghost Adventures is so Hollywood oriented, but it's so commercialized that I'm not saying that what they're doing isn't right, but what airs, and you know from working on shows, what airs is not what is captured. What airs is what the editor decides that he wants to air.
You're absolutely right. And it is TV. And that's something that people need to understand. It's entertainment. It is TV. And a lot of these shows start out doing the right thing and going the right direction. And then what happens is money and greed gets involved, and it changes people. And it changes, you know, those shows need ratings. Ratings pays the bills. And, you know, after so long, things happen and things have to occur. All I can say is that for the show that I was involved with, everything that you saw on TV was what happened. When they went in for the lockdown, they were literally locked down. It wasn't a gimmick or, going in one door and out the back. They were really locked into the Villisca Axemire house with a padlock, and they stayed in there the whole time they were in there. And, you know, I can't vouch for the other shows that they've done because I wasn't there. But the one that I was at, I saw it with my own eyes. But anybody and anything will tell you that in the show is, you know, in these shows, they are entertainment. All we can do is pray and hope that what little bit that we were involved, and the reason why I've done the ones I've done is to help people and let people know, you know, my main focus in this field is I talk about the dangers of ghost hunting, whether it be, you know, from going into abandoned buildings without permission to dealing with things that you don't know what you're dealing with to, you know, just helping the client in general. A lot of what I've been involved with on the shows has been simply my part has been because maybe somebody needed to hear that, or they are dealing with something like that themselves and didn't know who to reach out to, you know, that kind of concept. You know, I've been offered my own show. Three times last year I was offered my own show. But because of not having control of it and seeing what it's doing to very good personal friends of mine, that's why I've never done my own show. You know, it's just,
yeah.
You know, once you sign that paper, they own you. And a good buddy of mine experienced that, Jason Gowan, who was a part of a paranormal show that aired on A&E. I think they only ended up airing three episodes, Extreme Paranormal. When he signed on, that show was supposed to go one direction. But then once everybody signed the dotted line and the ink dried, they completely did a 360 and went a whole nother direction with it, and it was so not what he is about. And I knew that. And when I saw that show, I about died, because I knew, not because of what they were doing, because I knew that Jason had been put in a situation that he had no control over, and it was tearing him up inside. I could see it in his eyes in the show. And yeah. And of course, being a personal friend of him, I called him after and I was like, I know you're under contract. You're under, you know, you've got a gag order for so long or whatever, but let me tell you, buddy, I've got you back. I know that's not you on that TV. I know that's something that somebody has created, and it was because they owned you, and I understand how TV works. You know, a perfect example is, I know one of the big shows back in the day was John and Kate Plus Eight. You know, it was on Lifetime, or I think, or whatever, but it was the sextuplets, and the mom and dad and all that, and he got to the point where he didn't want to do the show no more, and the network threatened him that if he didn't finish the last, I think, six episodes or whatever, that they were going to sue him for, you know, $75 million, and they would have won because he signed the contract to fulfill those episodes. And that's what a lot of people don't understand about the TV side of it, is one, it is entertainment, ratings pay the bills, and that once you sign that paper, it don't matter what you thought, wanted, or had, they own you now.
Yeah, well, actually, with that said, too, is that I'm not going to name the show or the people involved, but there was one that was on Bio, which it depends on the production company also. The one thing that I have learned in doing the radio shows, and Kevin, you and I doing the radio shows and doing them with Brittany and everything else too, is the one thing that lacks 100% is artist control in any of these contracts. It's the people, they get so blindsided by, oh my God, I'm going to be on TV, and you sign for whatever. Well, you know what? And for everybody out there who is a paranormal team and wants to get a show, you're a fool. Because nothing, you have no say. There is no say whatsoever.
Nope. Not at all.
Nope.
I actually approached, and these are producer friends of mine, and that work in Hollywood, and they work with Sci-Fi, they work with Travel Channel. I actually approached, and kind of along the same lines as the book, but a little bit different. I mean, we can talk about that afterwards. But people who have actually had shows as my co-stars or my stars on the show and having me involved with it, I asked, and they and talking with them, they're like, yeah, you know, we'll ask. It's probably just not going to happen, though. I actually asked for 50% artist control. Half. As long as I have a say in what's aired and what's not, and hey, I suggest that you air this, instantaneously denied. And these are for people who are producing paranormal shows currently.
Oh, yeah.
It was denied.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy, man. It is crazy. And those teams, the people that get into this field because they think they're going to get rich, I laugh.
You're Zach. Unless you're Zach. Yeah. I was talking to Jeff Mudgett, and Jeff was walking out of a place, and Zach pulled up in a brand new Lamborghini.
Nice.
And it had Nevada plates. It didn't have dealer plates. Like, he was just borrowing it. No, it was Nevada plates. Unless he borrowed it from a friend. But, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Zach, Nick, and Aaron, those guys, those, and here's the other thing. I have the utmost respect for him. I'm not saying this, but you know what? They're making the paycheck.
Yeah.
And it's few and far between is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It really is.
That's where, I mean, honestly, do you think the guys from Ghost Hunters, do you really think that they're still Roto-Rooter plumbers? No.
Hell no.
Yeah.
They don't even use Roto-Rooter in the intro and stuff anymore, do they?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah,
oh,
they still do.
I haven't seen that show in so long. You know, with Grant being gone now, especially too, you know, it's, you know, I didn't even know they still did that.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know that Jason, or you know that Grant didn't go back to plumbing.
No.
They had enough to buy, they got enough money to where Jason and Grant bought their own resort in Vermont. I think it was Vermont, if I remember right. Yeah. You can't buy a hotel if you're making $29,000 a year as a Roto-Rooter plumber.
Yeah, yeah.
And taking time off work to investigate.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. You know, and another part of the television, and it even spans into Hollywood, you know, with all the freaking either paranormal movie or the latest craze is let's do a movie about possession. Let's do a movie about demons. And you get all this coming, you know, this information coming to these people that really have never done their homework, don't really know too much. And then they decide to go dabble in stuff. They go to Toys R Us or wherever, buy a Ouija board, start playing around with it, have no clue what they're doing, and then they start, you know, they bring something into their home, you know, and they don't have a clue to how to get rid of it. And, you know, and I've come across that a lot, you know. Well, down here in Texas, it seems to be the trend on a lot of the cases that I've gotten where a group of people, you know, get bored. They decide to get a bunch of beer, get drunk, and play around with a Ouija board. And next thing they know, they got crap flying and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff in their home. And, you know, and I think a lot, not all of it, but a lot is because of all the information, the shows on television. It sparks curiosity in people when they see this stuff. To try to experience something themselves, and then they get themselves in a bind when they start farting around with things they shouldn't be.
You know, I've been a big advocate on the whole the Ouija board stuff, and it's no secret that, you know, I get teased and stuff. And what the misconception of that is it's not the board that's the problem. The problem is who and how it's being used. That's
exactly
the problem. There's no education being done with it. It's like, you know, Hasbro, I think it was, released a new Princess Ouija board.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's all fine and dandy. You know, it's business. They're marketing something. They're trying to, you know, they're obviously using the whole Princess thing to market and sell and stuff. But the problem is that, you know, that shows you how ignorant they are, because they don't understand what that toy can actually do if it's not done right. And maybe that's not the right wording, but it's almost like giving a child a gun and hoping they don't find a bullet to go in it.
Yeah,
you know, the gun without the bullet is harmless. Nothing can happen. Now, if that child just happens to come across the bullet somewhere, though, that fits the gun, that they can put in the chamber and they can load it and then they shoot themselves, that's the problem. And,
yeah,
you know, and it's just, you know, thank God there are people out there in this field that get it and they understand, and they are trying to look out for the people in cases where that, you know, does happen. They're able to get them help.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, it, with that in mind, I totally agree with you, because it could be anything that you use. It doesn't even necessarily have to be the Ouija board. It's your intent, and it's, you know, just like using a ghost box. You got to close, open and close the ghost box, right? You got to close that door, and that's the same thing with these Ouija boards. You're putting your energy on that board. You're opening yourself up, and I got, you know, Matt and I have a friend, Brittany, who uses a Ouija board, but she knows how to open it. She knows how to close it, you know. And it's like you said, Chris, it's the knowledge of what you're really doing. It's not necessarily the device. It's your intent and knowing how to use it properly.
Yeah.
That's I personally don't even say the old word. It was one thing that I did as a kid, and I'm starting to, well, I've been doing this a long time now, but I've been starting to think that may have opened, I'm going to use the word, but I don't mean it in this way, the sensitivity to the other side for that communication. Not that I'm a sensitive or anything like that. That's why I put that BS disclaimer before it. But yeah, no, I honestly think that for what we did, open that sensitivity to where it's like, oh well, he wants to communicate, so let's see if we can, you know, let's see what I can do in a window from the other side is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, I don't get how something like Hasbro or Parker Brothers or whatever can put out something glamorous about it. It just, it doesn't make sense. How can you say, oh, well, you know, we're going to put some pretty rhinestones and we're going to put this and that on it, and girls at slumber parties or, you know, guys or whatever are going to get involved with this, and it's just going to be a whole bunch of fun.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you're still creating the same thing that's used to summon stuff. Like, it's used to, and yes, Jeff, you were 100% correct. Jeff Sanford is on, by the way. He's in chat right now.
Cool, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Jeff, or Chris, I know he knows you, so. But yes, Jeff, money, that is a 100% accurate thing. Anyway,
okay.
What corporations do to people is a whole different show. But, yeah, no, it is something that needs to be taken not with a grain of salt. It needs to be shown that you're messing with things that are a possibility you don't know about. That's what I said. I don't even
yep.
say the old word. I don't get the mentality of the marketers. I get it because it's money driven, but other than that, it doesn't make sense of, hey, this is something to where we get called after, again, two or three or four or five paranormal groups. And I do want to go back to that really quick. The thing that's the most disheartening about that is a homeowner, specifically, when they've called two or three or four, not only does it make your job harder, it's the ones that don't call anymore because they think everyone else is full of crap.
Yeah.
But the activity doesn't stop.
Yeah, and they sit there and deal with it, and it ends up tearing their family apart and causing divorces and children to be pulled out of the home, and I've seen it all, and it's so heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what another thing that can be heartbreaking is, oh, God, we were working on a case for over a year, and it involved a teenage boy, and he had he was part of a demonic oppression. You know, he had an attachment, and we had gone through all the steps, the psychological test, the whole nine yards, right? And we were starting to bring in clergy and some of our other friends in the field, and the family was just so. By the time we had undertaken this case, it was so affected in the family unit. You know, the boy was adopted, and his parents had adopted him, got divorced, and then the mother got remarried. So you had all these different elements and people arguing and cussing. You know, I'd have the mom call me saying, you know, don't, if you come over here, don't let my ex-husband come over here, you know, and just, oh, it was so horrible. And at one point we had brought one of our friends in that is a credible person in the demonology field, and he came in, and we were going to do a deliverance. And before we even, you know, right after we get out of the vehicle, the stepdad and the ex-husband, they went from just talking and, you know, bullshitting to, it went from 0 to 1,000 in anger. And one of them grabbed I thought he was pulling a gun out of his truck. I was like hitting the deck, and he grabbed some kind of board or something behind the seat of his truck, got out and was going to whip the other guy's ass. You know, and some of my team grabbed each person, was pulling them away. And when all that was going on, the boy started screaming, in pain and agony. And he's like, my back, my back. And he lifted up his shirt, and I was watching scratches just constantly appearing. I mean, he was just getting shredded up on his back. I mean, it's something you would see out of a movie, and I was witnessing this stuff, you know, and we tried to help him, and we broke the attachment, and, you know, we told him the steps that you've got to take and whatnot, and 3 days later it was back. So, unfortunately, they didn't listen. They didn't take the steps that the clergy had told him and everybody else had told him, and the boy called it back, and we had to do the worst case scenario. We had to stop. We couldn't help him anymore, because there's just no way of helping somebody that won't help themselves. And we kept telling the family that. And to this day, it's the most gut-wrenching thing that I've ever had to do as a founder. But I mean, we had done everything that anybody else in the field would have done, you know, and so to this day, I still don't really know what's going on in that family. I pray that things have gotten better.
You know, here's a question I have. Like, honestly, as all of us being investigators, but I'm wondering how either of you, and Chris, I'll ask you this first. I know we're running short. We're 16 minutes left right now. But, all right, I had a situation to where it was a private residence. We show up, and the homeowner is just shit-faced drunk, which, from what I learned, is how she spends most of her time. But her son, who's 13 years old, I have a written letter to me of experiences. How exactly do you handle that when all you have to deal with is the woman who's shit-faced drunk.
It's hard. We had a case in Eastern Kentucky kind of similar to that where this child was experiencing and developing things, and the mom was basically a pillhead. You know, every time we were around, she was so chilled out that, you know, it was very hard. And eventually what we did was we found a family member, ended up being the kid's grandparents, that understood what was going on and understood that this was a possibility that they were experiencing, not so much that ghosts were real, but for the sake of the child, they got involved, and we were able to help the child deal with what was going on, and come to find out the child ended up being gifted, basically. And I was able to hook him up with some people in the field that deal with that. And eventually what happened was the child ended up going and living with the grandparents. The situation with that also is that it's not our a duty where we have to, but as a moral duty as a parent, it's different than a caseworker going into a home and seeing that a child is being neglected or abused. And this child was. It was very, very obvious the child was taking care of himself because the mom was so dragged out. And as a former police officer and a firefighter, I just, you know, I felt that somebody needed to know what was going on. So we got, like I said, you know, in talking to the child, we found that, you know, his grandparents was basically the next best thing that had raised him or whatever. And we were able to contact them and get them involved. And luckily everything worked out good. You know, so we, you know, with their knowledge, we got social services involved. And maybe not everybody agrees with that, but as a parent, I couldn't stand seeing this child. This child was not only dealing with the spiritual side of things, but also the living side of things. And believe it or not, the living is what scares me more so than the spiritual side. And not every case is going to happen that way. It's not going to work out that way. But that's what we did in this instance. I've talking to other investigators that have dealt with cases like this, they've kind of had to do the same thing. They've had to get a grounded, responsible adult involved that the child trusted. And, you know, sometimes it's been an aunt, an uncle, or a neighbor, or a babysitter, or whatnot, and, you know, filled out or drunk or not, if the parent gets permission for you to be there, you've got the permission to be there, but you also have a sober adult that witnessed it and was there, and then at that point what you do is you just deal with that person more so than you do the parent, and you just let them, they're on a kind of a need-to-know basis at that point. And mostly it's just to let them know what little they need to know so they stay out of your hair while you do what you got to do.
Yeah. No, I was typing Jeff at the moment. He said that he had a situation kind of the same thing. But no, it's, you know, it is one of those things to where I was out there a couple times, and I eventually was able to convince her that it's a lot of everything in life is energy, is the way that I think of it. It doesn't matter if your brain right now, as you're listening to me, or I'm thinking about what I'm going to say, is neurons firing. It's all electrical, which it's energy, it never dissipates. What she's experiencing could be a negative, not spirit, not anything, just a negative energy that she emits. And it could honestly be causing issues.
Oh, yeah,
people,
absolutely.
Things, life, feed off negative energy. It doesn't mean there's a spirit there. So
yes.
That was one of the things she actually did.
One.
No, I was just saying she could be the problem. It's actually her, not a ghost. It's her causing.
Yeah,
it's her causing the paranormal. Yes, yes, she's feeding it and causing the problem when there's really not a problem there.
Yeah, that really seems to be exactly what's going on. God, I'm getting messages all over. Facebook, chat.
are we ruffling feathers tonight?
No, not at all, actually. I've kept it pretty PC. Remember, even though I've kind of dominated, I'm sorry, Kevin. I'm so intrigued by all this stuff and the conversation that's going on. So, Chris, I'm the guest co-host. Well, I should be the guest co-host. Hey, actually, how about this? Kevin, I'm sorry to see you. There's about 9 minutes left if you want to plug anything you want to plug. And also, tomorrow, my guest actually about 5 minutes ago had to cancel. So we can talk about stuff for another 2 hours tomorrow if you want to. Same number, same time.
Same number, same time. So same ghost channel.
Yeah. That's the beauty of Unknown Radio Network. We're on at the same time, different night.
Yep. Just different shows, different hosts.
There you go.
Well, no, Kevin, I want you involved. That's you would be my guest host.
Oh.
Flipping it on you.
Flipping it on you, man. Well, you know, being the head man of the network, I'm always game for some talk of the paranormal. But, yeah, Chris, what do you got coming up? You got some conventions coming up, or, you know, and where can people find out more about you, you know, your links and whatnot?
Well, the best place to find out anything about me that's going on is my website. And it's very simple. It's just my name, www.chrisdedman.com. And on that page pretty much tells you, you know, where I'm going to be, what's coming up, what's going on, things I've been involved with. I try to keep it updated as much as possible, but I realized tonight after you read my bio that I do need to make some changes on that, that there's been some changes since that. And I actually thought my web, I've got a guy that takes care of that website, and I thought he had done that, but apparently he hasn't. So thanks for bringing that to my attention, guys.
You're welcome, man.
You know, I try to keep up with everything, but, you know, I'm a family man, and I've got a full-time job, and, you know, it's hard sometimes to keep up with everything that's going on. My next event is July the 19th to the 20th. I'll be up in Iowa. It's the Ferris School event that they do up there. It's Iowa Paracon at the Ferris School. It's pretty cool. The Booth Brothers will be up there with me. Mike Holman from Jackass, John Tenney, Johnny Hauser, who's the caretaker of the Huasca Axe Murder House, will be there. Jenny Gurney, the list of Roslyn from Ghost Hunters Academy. We did it last year for the first time, and it was awesome. It was an awesome event. It turned out really good, and luckily they decided to do it again this year and bring the core group back, and they've added a couple people, but it's such a event, and it gets me out west a little ways, and not a lot goes on up in that area of the United States. So, you know, if you're anywhere around, it's right outside of Des Moines where it takes place, and I just completely lost my thought of, I had the town in my mind, and I've just lost it, but you can click on the link on my website. And then the big one I do every year is right in my backyard, right in my hometown. I'm very, very proud to be a part of this event. It started out years ago, 5 years ago, as a little small 40-booth event, and now we've grown to be the largest paranormal and horror convention in the United States, and that's Scarefest in Lexington, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. That's September the 13th through the 15th. And this year, they have doubled the convention space, and they've added a whole comic con kind of like thing to it. So it's going to be huge, huge this year. And they bring in tons of people, not just on the paranormal side, but the horror side. They've had some amazing people. They had a lot of the cast of The Walking Dead last year. They've had Romero, who was the creator of The Living Dead a couple years ago. They've had Dee Wallace, who is the mom from E.T. and also played in Cujo. They've had Kane Hodder, played Jason in several of the Jasons. Danielle Harris, who was in Rob Zombie's remake of Halloween, and also the original Halloween, she played the sister of Michael. Himself, Leatherface, just crazy, crazy actors and stuff that get involved, and it's such a wonderful event, and it's awesome to say that's right here in my hometown. And I tell people, if there's one convention you can go to and you've got to save up for it, you will not be let down if you go to Scarefest. And it's not just because I'm a part of it, it's in my backyard, but it's done right. I mean, they really do it right. And it's just a good event to go to. So Lord knows what else I'll get into this year and what's coming up, but just look at my website, and then that also links you to my Facebook and all that stuff also.
Yeah. Chris, speaking of that, of Scarefest, have you ever met Jim Crook?
He was
the helicopter zombie in the original Dawn of the Dead.
I don't think I did.
No, he goes to it every year, and I was talking to him, and he's a dear, dear friend. It's funny, he played a zombie in the original Dawn of the Dead, but he is one of the sweetest, like, just most genuine guys you'd ever meet in your life.
And older guy.
Yeah.
I think I know what you're talking
about now. Dawn of the Dead was, what, 1964? Something like that? The original one?
Yeah. You were breaking up. Of course, I didn't hear where you said he was with. When you started describing who you're talking about, because usually there's another guy that's with him. I can't think of his name. Because usually they set up together side by side. But yes,
yeah.
Very, very nice.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name off the top of my head either.
And I think the guy had something to do with one of the second one or something like, and that's why they travel together a lot. Now, I can't remember the guy's name, but yeah, and they're hilarious together. That's what's funny about it. That's why when you started describing who you were talking about, I knew who you were, who you were referring to. But very nice guy, very laid back. Just, out to meet people and have fun. And that's what's cool. A lot of these actors and stuff that are there are like that. You'll have a few that are, give me your money, go on, get out of the way kind of. But for the most part, most of them are really laid back. And we do like a VIP party at a pub that's there in the convention center. And it's just you're standing next to people that were paid millions of dollars to do this movie, and you're standing right next to them and hang out and talking to them, and it's just really cool to say, hey, I didn't have to go to Hollywood, hang out with a room full of Hollywood actors. We were all in our own environment. It wasn't something that they were being paid for to be there or whatever. It was, we were just hanging out as normal people, which was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thanks, Chris, for coming on. It was really a pleasure to talk to you and get to know you a little bit.
Well, good deal. Yeah, thanks for having me on, fellas, and you all have a great evening and take care. And once again, our thoughts go out to the families and friends of Oklahoma, and may God be with them tonight and through the months and years to come as they rebuild and our hearts go out to them and we wish everyone the best.
All right. Well, you have a great evening.
You too. Take care, guys.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, real quick. Yeah, I mean, if you got time tomorrow, we can keep continuing the conversation. And, I mean, Kevin, if you got time too, I mean, we can just keep it going. Just different show, same time.
Hey, give me a shout tomorrow. I don't know what my calendar is. So give me a shout tomorrow, and we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, that works.
Sounds good. Take care. Have a good night.
All right.
Good night, Chris.
All right. Great show. Great show. We're now in the archives. And, but yeah, man.
Kevin, have we ever not gone archive when I've been a guest host on your show?
No, usually every show that I'm on, there's sometimes on Sunday where we'll finish up right before go to archives, but 9 times out of 10, no, it's always the archives. That might be one of the reasons why we get more archived listens than live listens, and I'm happy to say I was messing with Justin and Kevin earlier this week because my Sunday show had the most archive listens of all the shows, and then Tuesday's show with myself and Jody, we beat Ghost Hunting Texas Style by one listener, live listener. We had 44 live listeners. They had 43. So
yeah,
I was rubbing in a little bit.
I saw that, and I want to applaud you on that. Because those guys, I don't know if it's promo. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if they had a very large previous following, but you finally beat them.
That's right.
And
that's right.
I was on a coattail once. Not both coattails. I was on one coattail. I was close to that second coattail.
It kind of goes different ways when it comes to it kind of goes all every week somebody else is got, and it has a lot to do with who you have on that week or what you're talking about, you know, but that's why I like it, you know. Chris Taylor and Paranormal Access Radio, they've only been on maybe a month and a half. He only had 6 live listeners last week, but he had 250 archive listens. So there you go. So I'm just glad that everybody on the network, they do their own thing, and a lot of people listen, you know. And I think we're up to, since I started this thing, I think we're up to about 70,000 listens since this whole network started. So that's a lot of people that have listened to different shows out there.
Yeah, and here's my thing, and I was thinking about it over, well, it's been over 2 months ago. It doesn't matter how many people that you have listened to the actual show, because you can always go back. It's not live radio. It's not FM. It's not AM.
Yeah.
You can go back. You can listen to it. And if you catch one person, that's really all that matters.
Yeah.
Because, to be honest, the way this is going to be such a cliche kind of douchebag, comparison here. But it doesn't matter if everybody who listened to the show tonight, and I thank everybody who did, that really doesn't matter. If you reached or were able to reach one person and it changed their perspective and they tell their friends about it or whatever, that's kind of like helping a client with an issue on a personal or private residence.
Well, check this out. This one kind of make you feel good because it made me feel pretty darn good when I got a text a while ago. The clients that I talked about at the beginning of the show that just called me yesterday that I'm about to go and sit down with the family later this week and get into this case. I told her yesterday when I was talking to her on the phone, I said, hey, if you got some time, I got a radio network and we got a show going on tomorrow night if you want to catch some of it, because she's wanting to understand the paranormal world a little bit more, right? Because it involves a lot to do with her particular case and that she's got some gifts involved as well. So I said, hey, check it out because it might help you, you know, bring more perspective to what you're going through. And sure enough, she listened tonight. And I got a text a while ago and I said, so how'd you like the show? And she goes, very interesting. She goes, a lot of that, you know, I could apply to what I'm going through in different scenarios and whatnot. So ultimately, I helped this client a little bit to get some more information to her by her listening to the show.
Yeah, and that's, like, to me, that honestly is what it's all about, is if there is somebody that will listen and relate. I don't care if we have 10 million listeners or one listener. If we reach one person,
yep,
and it helps them, that's honestly what matters.
Yep, I totally agree. And the fact that we get to network with people, and we get to talk to people that we don't normally run into in the street, you know, and find out more about how they tick and what they think in the field. And to me, it's like going to college every week, because I always learn something new every time I talk to somebody on the shows. So that's what also the great benefit of doing the radio is talking to these people and finding out their story and finding out what they do in the paranormal field and kind of get ideas from them and share your ideas to them. And that's what it's about, man.
Yeah. No, that's why I love, and you know what, you call me, you text me, even if it's last minute, I'll be there, because I wouldn't miss any of these experiences for anything in the world.
Oh, I know it. Let's see. Well, of course, tomorrow is Full Spectrum Radio, same time, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Unknown Radio Network. And I'm sure Matt will be making posts tomorrow about the show, so check it out. And let's see, next Tuesday on the show, I've interviewed this woman. I love her to death, and I wanted Jody to meet this person. We're going to have Alexandria Holzer on the show. And, yes, she is related to Hans Holzer, who has written a lot of books, one of the very first guys in our field to really go to the mainstream, right, and be a paranormal investigator and write books about it. This is the granddaughter of Hans, and she's going to be on the show, and she's a great guest. And let's see, Sunday on my show, Unknown Paranormal Radio, we're going to have psychic medium Christina George. So those are my plugs for tonight.
Yeah, well, tomorrow for Full Spectrum, it is kind of up in the air at the moment. Had a last-minute cancellation. But I will not let you down. Tomorrow, full-fledged.
We can scrounge some folks together now. You know that.
Yeah, I know that. So possibly I'm gonna talk with Chris again and see if we can continue our conversation. And Kevin, I hope that you're involved in this one. Because
I'll see you, man. I got so many things to do.
Yeah, I know, but I'm gonna throw you under the bus.
I know.
So it if you can't, I honestly truly understand, but so if Chris can come back, because I have many itches that need to be scratched and topics that we talked about tonight that really didn't get into. So I don't know, we'll see.
All right, well, we're going to...
I love the suspense.
Oh, yeah. Oh, one other thing I'll plug real quick. Just to remind folks, it's a month away, but I'm still going to go ahead and say it. June 25th, everyone. Please tune in to Terrify Radio, because it will be Terrify Radio's one-year anniversary of broadcasting, and it is the one-year anniversary of the birth of Unknown Radio Network. Because before this, it was just my show on Sundays every week. That was it. And then Terrify came along with Jody, and that's the birth of Unknown Radio Network. So we're going to have all the hosts and co-hosts of every show, I hope everybody can make it, on Terrify Radio. We're all going to be on here together. Justin's already told me that he's getting his guitar ready. If you didn't tune into the Apocalypse special broadcast, you'll know what I'm talking about when I say Justin and his guitar. But and they're getting some polties ready as well. And hopefully, we'll have some special guests that have been interviewed. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be on TFI. It can be on any of the shows that are on our network. We might have a few of them call in, you know, just to chime in with the craziness. We're not going to really interview anybody, but if they'd like to call in and show their love or make us laugh, whatever it might be, we'll probably make them laugh more than likely, because we're nuts. And Chris has confirmed that he's going to be there, our newest radio show to the network, and he has not been on a broadcast with all of us yet, Matt. So, yeah.
So,
I told him to prepare him.
He's got something coming. not that I'm going to tear into him, because he runs a great show. But let's be honest, there might be minor hazing.
No,
he is a great show, and I'll go easy on him, and yeah, I wouldn't miss it for the world. So yeah, you can guarantee, lock it down, that I will be here too.
Yeah, and hopefully scheduling wise, Brittany will be here, and Jody. I know that Martin and Jeff from my Sunday show, they weren't there for the Apocalypse show, except for Martin, who prank called us that night. Yeah, that was funny. But
bastard.
They'll be on the show, I know for sure, and because I've already threatened them. But no, I'm kidding. No, they told me they'd be there. But yeah, it'll be a good time. So we'll start really promoting that and see if we can get a lot of people involved and listening. Who knows who will have to call in that night? We're not going to even say. If we do have people calling in, we're not going to say who they are. You just have to tune in and find out and see who calls in.
Oh, yeah, no, I trust me, we'll have people. We will have a lot of people calling in.
Yeah, so it's going to be a big party right here, June 25th. It's a Tuesday. It'll be 8 p.m. Central Time. And, yeah, get your party hats on and get ready to laugh because it's going to be, yeah, it'll be epic.
Yeah, and, you know, Kevin, honestly, that's what I love about this family is it's not only serious. I mean, we have laughs, like actually gut-busting laughs. It's fun. It's entertainment. You know, I mean, all at the same time and educational as best that we can.
I'll wrap it up on this because Jody just called me and I got to call her back. I was listening to Ghost Hunting Texas Style last week, and I just got to throw out a quote that Justin and Kevin said. And like they said, I'll put this disclaimer before I say it. No disrespect to the person that passed away, right? But like they announced Thursday, a guy that's very popular in NASCAR back in the day passed away last week. But like Justin said, his name sounds like an STD. Dick Trickle passed away last week.
Yeah.
But if you think about the name, that's a pretty funny joke.
Yeah. And the joke I came up with, too, is if anybody investigated him, there has to be some residual that you might want to stay away from.
Very good, very good. All right, well, we're going to wrap this up so that I can call Miss Parks and find out how her interview went. But tune in tomorrow, folks. Full Spectrum Radio right here on the Unknown Radio Network, 8 p.m. Central Time. Good night, everybody.
Good night.